coming to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network, and ESPN analyst Mark Dixon. And I am your host, Dan Flynn. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, leave a rating, and share it with a friend. Also, don't forget to check out Monday's In the Crease podcast with Aburn and Devitt, along with Friday's Weekend Preview podcast featuring Quint Kesenick and Terry Foy. Dixie, let's get it. Dix, welcome, and what another crazy weekend of college lacrosse we saw. We had 3 1-goal games featuring top 10 teams, and the nation's top 3-ranked teams, all previously undefeated, went down in flames. A whole new Maverick media poll with a new number one, of course, and it was, did you get to see some of these games?
I did get to see some of them. To say a crazy weekend is an understatement. Yeah. It's kind of like everything that we learned in the first 3-4 weeks of the season, just throw right out the window and start fresh, because some unbelievable performances. I know we're going to talk about it. Princeton-Hopkins. I mean, had Princeton won that game in a close one, okay, maybe. But to win 18-7, blow the Blue Jays out, unbelievable. Syracuse continues to live dangerously. You got Duke kind of on the ropes. Is their season in the balance? Is it fair to say that this early in the season, if they lose to Richmond, their season could go south? I mean, I think it's a little too early to tell, but they come back and get a big win. And, North Carolina walloped by Hopkins a week ago at home. They have to go across the country, take on Denver, a place they haven't won in years, and pull off the victory. So it was a wild weekend, and it was a departure from the nice, unseasonable temperatures that we've been having. It was cold and windy in most places. Maryland, Notre Dame with a wind chill of like 17 degrees in South Bend, Indiana. So the results were different. The weather was different. And it's completely changed the complexion of the 2017 college lacrosse season.
Yeah, what we thought we knew going into this weekend has radically changed over the course of a few days. So let's get right into it. Perhaps the biggest game of the weekend featured Notre Dame and Maryland. Maryland headed out to South Bend. And as you mentioned, Notre Dame gets a 5-4 win over Maryland in a game that was on TV, but hard to watch for lacrosse fans. Lots of good defense, good team defense, but 37 turnovers, 20 turnovers by the Terps. Good goalie play, though, but tough, the opposite of running a gun, high scoring lacrosse we've seen in some other games this weekend.
Well, this is what you get when you get Maryland Notre Dame. You typically get a more methodical game, two very, very good defenses year in and year out. When you talk about the job that Jerry Byrne does at Notre Dame, and then you got Kevin Connery at Maryland, two of the best coordinators in college lacrosse when it comes to defenses. So this is kind of what you expect. It was cold. I mean, it was really, really cold. And I'm not saying that the number of turnovers, I'm not blaming the weather for it, but it's a different dynamic when you're playing in that wind. And look, Notre Dame practices for the most part outside, but if it gets super cold, they can go inside. Maryland's been enjoying some decent temperatures in College Park around this Baltimore metropolitan area for quite some time. But, I think it was – I think it's two teams that are built – on defense, have some pretty capable offensive players. And at the end of the game, it just became who was going to make that one extra play, who was going to make more plays than the other. And Notre Dame proved to be that team. I look at takeaways. The first thing that jumps off the page at me is Garrett Eppel, the defender for Notre Dame, just basically shut down Matt Rambo. And Eppel's a guy that Notre Dame missed sorely a year ago. He missed the majority of the season with an injury. I think it showed in some of the defensive struggles that Notre Dame had. Now he's back, obviously without Matt Landis, your defender of the year from 2016. But I think Eppel got into the national conversation this past weekend even more with his defensive effort. And on the flip side, I think Dan Morris, you're replacing a two-time All-American in Kyle Bernlohr. And Morris, 13 saves in this game. Outplayed Shane Doss of Notre Dame. Those were the two Like, if you're looking for guys that emerged out of this game as now in that national conversation as pretty good players, I think you look at Epple for Notre Dame and you look at Morris for Maryland.
On the flip side, lots of star power in this game. Some guys, you know, Sergio Perkovic still struggling a little bit, 0 for 8 shooting, I believe. And the attack unit of Maryland was kept fairly quiet by Epple and the rest of the Irish defense.
Yeah, I mean, the newly christened Run DMC was handed UB Illin by the Notre Dame defense.
Good one.
And that's a great group, but this Notre Dame defensive group is special too. So hats off. Anytime you can hold the likes of Matt Rambo, Colin Heacock, and Dylan Maltz to a combined, I mean, let's see, they have 2 goals and 2 assists. Yeah. Not bad. Not a bad day at the office. And I think this speaks to the necessity of Maryland to develop that depth of scoring in the midfield. And I think they got it with Connor Kelly. And we knew that Kelly was going to supply it. But they were, you know, Jared Bernhardt was held in check this game. He did have an assist. And I think if you're looking for an emerging star on Notre Dame, Costabile stepped up with a big goal. The freshman out of Mount St. Joe in the Baltimore area, Brian Costabile with a big goal. He had 3 shots, got a ground ball in the game. So, but yeah, you're right. You know, your Sergio Perkovic, you know, 0 for 8. You know, the Maryland attack held in check. But again, I mean, these are two teams that are. I mean, anybody can look at this thing from an analytical standpoint and say these two teams don't play slow. And I'm not accusing these teams of playing slow. But at the end of the day, Maryland and Notre Dame are both more conservative on offense than some of the other teams in the top 10 and the top 15 in college across. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't care about number of possessions and all that kind of stuff. It's just what they do when they get the ball. Like, what do they do when they get the ball? And there was a lot of turnovers, as we mentioned, in this ball game. I'm looking up the number again. I know you can play 37 turnovers combined. So it's not necessarily teams playing quicker or faster. Teams played a little sloppy, and the defenses played really, really well.
25 forced turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, Epple himself had 4 or 5. Yeah. So exactly. So is this a game that people are going to look at and say this is everything that's right with college lacrosse? But I also think it's unfair for people to look at it and make a suggestion that this is everything wrong with the game too. It was a decent game. It wasn't super entertaining, but that's not it's not their job to entertain us, quote unquote. It's their job to try to get wins.
In a game that was a little bit more entertaining, a battle for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Penn State beats Penn 14-13. Penn comes, took an early lead, and Penn State had a big third quarter, 7 goals, comes back to win it. The big guy was Nick Spillane, midfielder, with 5 goals for Penn State in this one as they take a 14-13 win. And again, Gerard Arcieri, their outstanding freshman faceoff man, 24-31 at X.
I've talked about it throughout the preseason, now in the regular season. You know, Arcieri is the difference maker for this lacrosse team. Penn State had a very capable offense a year ago and just couldn't get consistent possessions, you know, to keep the pressure on defenses. And here you have a situation where Arcieri is able to do that. And all you have to look at is the fourth quarter of this game. I mean, you're looking at a score that's close. You're in a dogfight. You're down 11-10. You're up 11-10 going into the fourth quarter, and Arcieri goes 5 out of 7 in the fourth quarter, getting you the ball back so you can keep offensive momentum, but also keeping the ball away from a Penn team that is very, very dangerous. So, all said, you know, Arcieri's day at the office was 24 out of 31 at the faceoff dot, which is pretty darn impressive.
Amazing.
And you mentioned Nick Spillane. He's a guy last year as a freshman that had moments and was a consistent participant on that second midfield line with Kevin Fox, as well as Ryan Keenan ran on the second line last year with Spillane. And they got great experience a year ago supporting that first midfield line of a year ago of Sutton, Florence, and Dan Craig. So you're seeing a guy in Spillane, season stepping up, This is just a very, very dangerous Penn State team. They're very talented offensively. I think defensively they've got some holes to fill. Colby Neese, only 6 saves in the game, the starting goaltender for Penn State. But give credit to Penn. I mean, they are a very, very talented team. Tyler Dunn on the attack with 4 goals. Simon Mathias with 3 goals and an assist. Alex Rosner, they couldn't hold him down. Maybe the best finisher in the Ivy League this year in terms of being a pure goal scorer. An attackman, can play a little midfield as well. But again, we talked about it last week with Virginia. You know, it's such a fickle sister, you know, that those one goal wins, one goal losses, and now Penn finds themselves on the short end. But, you know, I think you saw in the Inside Lacrosse Maverick poll, Penn didn't fall too far. No. I think that speaks to the respect that folks have for the Penn Quakers, and I think it speaks to the respect that folks have for Penn State in 2017.
Thanks. Side note, I want to tell you a funny story. So one time when I was working at the University of Pennsylvania, which is in Philadelphia.
It is.
Yeah. Well, not everybody
Thank
knows.
Thank you.
That. So it's in University City, which is on the west side of the Schuylkill.
Yeah,
it's actually like borders Drexel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like there's an alley that separates Drexel and Penn's campus. And it was the summertime, and a kid comes in with his mom, and it's a football recruit. It looks, you know, she's asking for the football office. And the kid looked like a Division I running back or defensive back. And his mom says, "Is this where's the Penn State football office?" And I said,
Penn State? Yeah.
And she said, "Yes." I said, "Well, what coach are you looking for?" And she told me the coach she was looking for, not a member of the Penn football coaching staff. I said,
She wasn't looking for Al Bagnoli?
I said, "Look, do you have the coach's phone number?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Well, you need to call him and tell him you're going to be about 3 hours late because you are in Philadelphia and you need to get to State College because you're on the wrong campus."
Mm-hmm.
And she was a little embarrassed, and the kid almost cried because he was there on his like unofficial recruiting trip, meeting with the coach in the summertime, and was 3 hours away on the wrong campus. So that kind of stuff can happen.
I thought you were going to say that Penn swooped in and signed him there on the spot.
It was a 3-time All Ivy,
first team, little college All American, and
his name was
Joe Dudek. What the heck? Why not Dudek? Remember that from the mid '80s?
Yeah, Plymouth State.
The Heisman. Like,
his guy, name was guy, Chuck Bednarik.
Chuck Bednarik. He rushed for 27,000 yards in 4 years, scored 958 touchdowns, and graduated with a 3.6 GPA and didn't get drafted.
Dick's moving on. North Carolina, coming off a tough loss to Hopkins at home in Chapel Hill, goes out to the Mile High City and beats the number one ranked Denver Pioneers 13-9 at sold out Peter Barton Stadium. Brian Balcom had a career high 17 saves. He was on fire. And Luke Goldstock, 4 goals and 1 assist.
Big game. I mean, obviously a huge game. Denver has had Carolina's number over the years. You take into consideration, I think, 3 times in the first round of the NCAA tournament over the last 5-6 years. Denver has ended North Carolina's season. Carolina coming off of getting walloped by Hopkins 13-5. Denver is kind of rolling and clicking on all cylinders. And, you know, again, everything points to a Denver win. And it was North Carolina that just executed and played fantastic. Takeaways in this one, obviously you mentioned Brian Balcom, 17 saves. Quite simply, North Carolina got better goaltending in this game than did Denver. Alex Reddy only made 6 stops. And I see Reddy kind of struggling over the last couple of weeks for Denver. So that's something that they're going to want to, you know, see better play out of their goalie. How about the weather, though? 66 degrees in Denver. It's 30 degrees in Baltimore and, you know, 65 degrees out west. So God bless. Luke Goldstock, big game, as you mentioned, 4 goals. Nice bounce back after being really held in check by Johns Hopkins the week before. Chris Cloutier with 2 goals. You know, I think one of the underappreciated aspects of this game would be the faceoff work of Stephen Kelly.
He's outstanding.
10 out of 24, which at the end of the day, you're thinking, okay, you know, less than 50%, but you're going up against Trevor Baptiste, who's been the best in the business for the last 2-3 years running, and, you know, this year is no exception. So being able to, quote-unquote, keep him under wraps and not allowing him to go off and dominate, I think, was huge for North Carolina. So Stephen Kelly is a guy who just continues to get things done, you know, game in and game out. But again, Brian Baulkham, I mean, 17 saves, only gives up 9 goals. You know, Denver's is a team, when they do get possession, they take long possessions, they make you work on defense, and you look for those layups. You know, I think the Carolina defense did a good job of protecting Baulkham, but when they couldn't, you know, I thought Baulkham was terrific and a big difference in this game.
Yeah, it was very, very close game stats-wise. Denver won the ground ball battle, took more shots, but it was really Baulkham that was the big difference.
No question.
Dix, one of the most surprising scores of the entire weekend. Hopkins rolling at 4-0, coming off a couple of really good wins, including the aforementioned win over Chapel Hill, gets taken apart and destroyed by Princeton on Friday afternoon on national TV. Princeton wins 18-7. Tigers broke open a 3-2 game, 7 straight goals in the second quarter, takes a 10-2 lead into the half. You're thinking maybe the Blue Jays can muster something, make a game of it in the third quarter. Princeton scores 5 of the first 6 in the third quarter. Midway through the third quarter, it's 15-3, and that was that. Zach Currier, can a guy dominate a game more without scoring a goal than he did?
He's been doing it his entire career at Princeton, and he's just a special kind of player. He rarely leaves the field, and I think Tom Schreiber was very much a player like that during his days at Princeton, although he was probably a better scorer and a better offensive player than Zach Currier. But in terms of playing defense, getting ground balls, facing off, you know, clearing the ball, playing man up, playing man down, parking cars for game day, selling hot dogs, selling programs, and maybe even doing some PA announcing. I mean, the guy does everything for Princeton lacrosse. So I think it was kind of neat to have a nationally televised game where Currier just was. I mean, you look at his stat line; it was unbelievable. 3 assists, 10 ground balls, won 15 out of 19 at the faceoff dot. Really?
Yeah, pretty fantastic.
I mean, that's special.
He reminds me of Matt Abbott, Syracuse player, who would do a lot of the same things. Clear the ball, a guy who influences the game between the lines, never scored a whole lot of goals, but could dominate a game just in the middle of the field.
I don't disagree with that, but Abbott was not an offensive player in the 6-on-6 set. He was not a creator or an initiator the way Currier is. Currier is, I mean, every time Currier got the ball on the wing, I mean, he immediately draws the attention and respect of the defense. So I agree with you to a point, but Matt Abbott typically peeled off when it was time to play offense. Zach Currier stays. And not only does he just stay and hang out and catch his breath, he's an initiator, he's a creator for Princeton lacrosse. But look, coming into this, you know, what we do every Sunday is we evaluate the games, and we're like, okay, I want to talk about this game, I want to talk about that game. And yeah, I honestly thought coming into this weekend, like, Princeton Hopkins was not going to be a game we would be discussing, just because Hopkins was rolling. Princeton has struggled, not just this season, but in years past. I don't think they had beaten Hopkins at Tiger Woods, you know, Class of 52 Stadium since 01, I want to say. 01, 03. I mean, it's been a while since Princeton knocked off Hopkins at Tiger Woods. So,
Tiger Woods?
We call it Tiger Woods because, and I stole that from Larry Quinn,
okay,
volunteer assistant at Johns Hopkins. When you look at the field, it's a field and it's just surrounded by woods.
That's true, yeah.
Tiger Woods.
Okay, I got it.
So, yeah, so I always call it Tiger Woods. I mean, and you just look up and down. I mean, Austin Sims back in the lineup for Princeton, scores the first goal of the game, maybe the first 2 goals.
First 2 goals of the game.
And just, you know, he's not dodging or anything. He's just kind of getting the ball and ripping
Couldn't
it.
Couldn't miss.
And yeah, he was red hot. And you just saw, I thought that Princeton came into the game confident. Do I think Hopkins was flat? Yes, I do think they were flat. But at the end of the day, you've got to give credit to Princeton for coming out, playing hard. With every goal, you just saw their confidence brimming and swelling and going out of control. And Hopkins couldn't do a damn thing about it.
No.
That's the thing. They couldn't do anything about it.
It looked like they were playing a man down the whole game with just short sticks, like 5 short sticks trying to cover 6 guys from Princeton.
They were always kind of a step behind. I thought Princeton shot the ball incredibly
well.
They did. I mean, they got good places to shoot from. And when they did shoot, great location.
Michael Sowers is very good.
Sowers is legit.
He had 2 goals and 2 assists.
You know, Sowers a guy, you know, U19 player, and he's just that guy, you know, in the frame of some great Princeton attackmen that you've seen in years past. You know, a guy that he really reminded me of was Taylor Simmers, a guy that I played against back in the 90s. I know Kevin Lowe was the guy back in the, you know, early mid 90s, but Taylor Simmers was just as bit as dangerous and athletic, probably more athletic than Lowe, just not as big, but just a guy who just would get to the goal. You thought you had him, and he'd make a little move here, a little move there, and he would stick it. You know, so Sowers is you know, very, very, very talented player.
And another interesting stat is that Hopkins, which had come into the game with the second most efficient extra man offense, goes 0-for the game in this one.
Great game plan by Princeton. You know, they knew where to be, and they just shut off a little bit. And I thought they did a great job against the Hopkins man down. Obviously, I'll tell you another stat. You look at the clears. And in watching that game, the clearing, Hopkins was 13 out of 15. Princeton was 14 out of 21. That's Hopkins a year ago in 2016. Just a consistent inability to clear the ball. And Princeton gave it back on, you know, they were 1-for-6. I'm sorry. They were 2 out of 6 in the fourth quarter, 1 out of 3 in the third. But by then, they had a 10-2 lead. But I'm just saying, you know, they got sloppy, and Hopkins was never able to capitalize on that on the clearing game for the Princeton Tigers. So, you know, stats are stats. I mean, they're one thing, but when you're looking at this thing overall and you see a team, you know, failing to clear 7 times out of 21, you're like, wow, you probably think they'd lose that game. Not only did they win the game, they won the game going away. It was completely dominant by Princeton.
Totally. I got a question for you. Games like this, do you burn the film and just say, hey, that was just one that we weren't ready to play? And there's no sense in watching that. That's not who we are. Or do you study it and watch it over and over and really critique what you did and move on?
I think you watch it, but you don't harp on it. Look, things happen. You know, is Princeton 11 goals better than Johns Hopkins? If they played 9 more times, the answer would probably be no. And I'm not saying Hopkins would win 8 of those 9 to make it 8-2 or vice versa. It's just Princeton is not 11 goals better than Johns Hopkins. On that day, they were. And nothing seemed to go right for Johns Hopkins. The biggest thing that didn't go right for them was Princeton just played a great lacrosse game.
Nearly a perfect first half.
Yep.
And it was over early in the third quarter. A game that did not end early, Dix, went down to the wire again in the Dome. Syracuse Orange get an exciting 14-13 win over the Virginia Cavaliers in an ACC rivalry. Down 10-5, Syracuse dug a hole again, but came back again, and went on a last-second Sergio Salcedo shot. Well, when I say last second, I meant not like the last couple of games.
Right.
But in the last 30 seconds or so.
You want to talk about living dangerous. Syracuse likes to live dangerous. And I'm sure John Desco and his coaching staff, it's not the best situation for them, but this is as close to a team in terms of drama that I've seen up at Syracuse since, you know, when the Pals were there, and a team that can erase, you know, a 4-goal lead in you know, the matter of minutes or make these incredible plays down the stretch. This is an exciting team, and last second goal beats Albany. Gave up a last second goal against Army, and they lose. And now they score, you know, a last-second goal. I mean last second. I mean, you know, last 30, 45 seconds of a game.
15 seconds left.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just – it's exciting. Yeah. I mean, that is exciting. Down by 5 goals in the third quarter.
They scored 9 of the last 12 goals in the game.
Yeah. And I think, does this happen if they're playing at Klockner? I don't know. This could be the quote-unquote magic of the Carrier Dome, you know, the essence of the Dome. I say that half jokingly. I mean, there is something to the mystique of the Carrier Dome, but this is a team that just made plays down the stretch. They were fantastic down the stretch. I mean, how about Matt Lane? You know, 6'6". You know, it's getting to be March Madness almost, and he should be you know, playing college basketball maybe with a frame like that. But instead, he's playing college lacrosse. He scored a goal that's tied the game late. Just kind of took over and dodged from the wing and made a play. And he finishes with 3 goals and 2 assists. You know, Salcido, you mentioned him, the All-American, steps up with the game winner, 2 goals and 3 assists. I mean, those two really just kind of put Syracuse on their back and made things happen. The other thing I think we need to mention, Ben Williams in this game, 14 out of 31, less than 50%. But when Ben Williams plays and when Ben Williams is a part of the lineup for Syracuse, they are a different lacrosse team. And this is no exception. I think just merely his presence and the ability to split the faceoffs in the fourth quarter were huge for the Orange.
And let's not forget, Virginia was right there, and they played well. Almost well enough to get a W. Michael Krause had 4 goals. Dox Aiken, 3 goals.
Two freshmen.
Yeah. Ryan Conrad with 2 goals and Zed Williams with 2 goals. So on the 20th anniversary of that game we were talking about, I think last week, where it was 22-21, the Casey Powell game where he had 13 points, they put on another thriller up in the Dome.
This was a great game to watch if you were a fan. I mean, I know we're kind of bagging on the Notre Dame-Maryland game.
Yes, we were.
I mean, look, that, to some people, that's beautiful lacrosse. To those people, this is an abomination. You know, what are you doing giving up 2 goals in the last couple of minutes of a game to lose on the road and, you know, blah, blah, blah. This was a fantastic lacrosse game. And I think there's still two teams that are really searching for identities. I mean, in no way, shape or form do Virginia or Syracuse know who they really are here in early March.
A team that is really forging an identity for itself, Dix, the Rutgers Knights.
Scarlet Knights.
Yes. They get a 13-11 win over Brown. Kieran Mullen with 4 goals to lead Rutgers. And the Rutgers Scarlet Knights sit at 5-0 and are well-placed in the top 10 of the Maverick media poll this week.
Yeah, and again, Rutgers is a team that had a great turnaround in 2016, beat Hopkins twice, went to the the Big Ten tournament, beat Johns Hopkins in the first round, goes to the Big Ten championship, loses to Maryland, doesn't get into the NCAA tournament. And the primary reason Rutgers didn't make it to the NCAA tournament a year ago was because of their strength of schedule. Quite frankly, their out-of-conference schedule was pretty weak. So what I love about it is Rutgers did something, and they did something about it. And they added Brown. They dropped Monmouth. Monmouth's actually having a pretty good year. Mm-hmm. But they add Brown, a Final Four team from a year ago, championship week semifinalist from a year ago, and they beat him at home. And I know Brown is not the team that they were last year. The whole coaching staff is gone, in addition to, you know, their first-team All-American goalie and a ton of scoring and blah, 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 and this, that, and the other thing. But the fact of the matter is Rutgers took down Brown, and the reason that they got the game was to bolster their NCAA tournament resume, to go along with whatever they accomplish in the Big Ten Conference. So I think that this is a huge win for Rutgers. It's a huge confidence builder. I mean, they've got Stony Brook this weekend.
It's a big game.
And that is a huge, huge game. And then they got Princeton coming to town. All of a sudden, that game has gotten huge. So big win for Rutgers.
Yeah, now you called a game Rutgers and Wagner last for the Big Ten Network. What did you see in that one? I know Wagner isn't a top 20 program at this point, but what did you see about the, you know, in particular, how they've overcome a couple injuries?
The thing that jumps out at me for Rutgers is I think their defense is really good. It starts with goaltender Max Edelman. I think he's very athletic. He's a very disciplined goalie. He's very quick. I like their defense a lot. When you talk about Michael Rexrode is a terrific player. Chris Grohl, these are really experienced guys, and I think they're very tough defensively. Offensively, Jules Henningberg is as good as advertised, and Kieran Mullins, who scored 4 goals against Brown, is a freshman that spent spent last year at the United States Military Academy prep school. So in essence, he's a transfer from Army. He's quick. He's a little smaller, but he's very, very talented, and just a really, really good player. With them losing Charlene Beattie's to injury, but the one guy that really impresses me for Rutgers is their long stick midfielder Kyle Pless. Zach Sikora graduated. Pless is long. He looks like a body double for Sikora. Great on ground balls. Does a good job of causing turnovers. Calls two against Brown. Pless is a difference maker for Rutgers.
Moving on, a couple of quick takes, Dix. Duke got a good win on Sunday at Richmond, 9-8. They were down 5-2. Richmond had them on the ropes. Richmond had a couple of extra man opportunities late in the second quarter that failed to capitalize on. Maybe would have put them away. But the Blue Devils come back and get a 9-8 win.
This is a situation where it's hard to put Duke and season going south in the same sentence, just because we've seen the Blue Devils react and positively to adversity in the early months of a season. But you know, Richmond's undefeated and they beat Duke last year, so to go into their home stadium and to get that win, I think that's a huge confidence boost, you know, for a young raw Duke team. And if you're Richmond, you know, I guess you're supposed to lose to Duke if you're a Richmond Spider. But I don't think that's the mindset anymore in Richmond. So big win for the Duke Blue Devils. Bryant knocking off Yale.
Yeah, I know.
That is a game that caught our attention.
We had a listener ask like a good question about Yale, saying what gives. Last week they go to Maryland, lose to the nation's top-ranked team by one goal, playing without your star attackman, and then they get upended by the Bryant Bulldogs on Sunday.
Yeah, and Ben Reeves is back in the lineup for Yale. He had four assists in this game. Eric Scott, two goals, but, you know, Bryant, maybe this is a, you know, it's like it's like Bryant's like the Olympics. It's like every 4 years, they're really, really good. They're always decent, but it's like every 3-4 years, Bryant gets really, really good, and they make a run, and they win the Northeast Conference, and they go into the NCAA tournament. You know, they beat Syracuse a few years ago. Gunnar Walt in between the pipes. Tucker James, two goals and two assists. I feel like Tucker James has been there for 10 years. I remember calling, you know, when he was a freshman, when they went to I think Syracuse in the first round of the NCAA tournament, where they didn't win that game. You know, I remember Tucker James being a part of that.
Do you remember when we did the Big City Classic in the Meadowlands?
Yeah.
And Don Bosco Prep played Bergen Catholic.
I don't remember that.
But. He was in that game. So there would be a high school game that would be before the I remember Tucker James from that. So it does seem like he has been
around forever.
A long time. Yeah.
You know, you look at Ohio State, double dip over the weekend, beat Marquette on Friday. 12-6, I believe, and then turn around and beat Bellarmine 14-11. Both were played indoors in Milwaukee.
A nice facility.
Yeah.
I saw some highlights from that one. It's a new facility in Milwaukee. It's very nice.
Yeah, really, really nice facility. And then you got Albany beating Cornell 17-6.
Cornell's 0-4.
Cornell's 0-4, giving up a lot of goals. You know, it's been a tough start for the Big Red, but, you know, I think, and then you look at Albany, you know, this team can score goals. You know, they lose Seth Oaks, but they still get, you know, Connor Fields back. They took Syracuse down to the wire. You know, we'll see Albany this weekend playing against Maryland.
Big one.
Huge test, obviously, for both ball clubs.
So, at this point, do you think we're going to see an undefeated team this season?
No.
Yeah, I
doubt it. I doubt it. These teams are too close in talent. I definitely see, you know, I don't see an undefeated national champion.
Yeah, I mean, Penn State and Notre Dame and Rutgers are the three best candidates right now in terms of the top 10 teams, and they all got to go on the road to play conference matchups that will be very difficult against very good teams. So let's move right on to the Maverick Men's Division I Media Poll, Dix. This week we have Denver slides down to number 5, 4-1 after their loss to Carolina. Coming in at 4 is North Carolina. Penn State moves up 5 spots from number 8 to number 3. They sit at 5-0 in third. Maryland slips to second, and Notre Dame is our unanimous number 1 team in the nation this year. They all 33 voters in the Maverick media poll voted for them. Who do you have? Who did you have in your top 5?
Number 1, I've got Notre Dame.
Okay.
Number 2.
Deserved. I mean, right?
You beat Absolutely.
The number 1 team.
You beat the number 1 team.
And you were a top team. You move up.
And I think the poll was more about, you know, like the timing of the wins and losses versus actual quality. Like most voters, I was sitting last night taking a long time putting in my votes. And I think finally I said, you know what? This is March 5th. It doesn't mean that. I mean, it's okay. It's great for us to talk about and, you know, water cooler fodder, if you will. But, you know, who cares? No one cares at the end of the day what the rankings are on March 5th. So I just kind of just went through, you know, it's like almost throwing pasta against the wall. See what sticks. Notre Dame number one, Penn State number two, Maryland number three, Denver number four, and I've got the Scarlet Fever. I went Rutgers number five.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of a lot of the voters were having some difficulty this weekend.
Yeah.
And talking about it through social media. I think people care about this. I understand you're, you know,
I'm not saying they don't care, and no, I'm not saying I
you're
don't
saying,
care.
Do but... not pull your hair out over this as a voter trying to put it together. It's only March 5th.
Exactly.
But, yeah, it a lot of the voters saying that it was one of the toughest weeks they've ever had in choosing some of this. And it was a lot of shakeup. It was, you know, of all the shakeup, I'm looking at, only one team really entered the top 10 that wasn't in it, and that's Rutgers moving up from moving up to number eight in the country.
Okay. Yeah.
And deservedly so. Virginia was the only team that exited the top 10. And Yale. Yale was the biggest free faller from number 6 to number 20. So another crazy week of college lacrosse, and there's some really good games coming up this week too. So the poll will just continue to be shook up.
And we've talked about it on this podcast, and I've talked about it in other media outlets. So Rutgers is now a huge Brown fan. They want Brown to tear it up because they want that win to have to just gain value. They don't want Brown to struggle this year so that win loses luster. Penn State is a huge Penn fan. You know, they beat Penn. They want Penn State to continue to excel and play well, and you know, and now Yale is a huge Bryant fan. You know, they want that, they don't want that to be a bad loss at the end of the day, meaning a team with a low RPI that they lost to is going to drag their resume down come tournament time. And look, there's a lot of lacrosse left to be played, but that's kind of the thinking after you go in these out-of-conference games, win or lose. You know, if you beat a team, you're thinking, you know, I want this team to be successful. And if you lose to a team, I want this team to be successful, because you don't want it to be – you want it to be stay a big win, and you don't want it to become a bad loss.
You know what's a great early season win, especially at the beginning of March, Dix? Using sideline swap. Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. You find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more, or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely. List in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit sidelineswap.com today to get started. That's sideline, SWAP.com, Sideline Swap. All right, Dix, let's get to this week's Epic IL Committed Academy Freshman of the Week. Now, we tried something new this week, and we let the public vote on this, and it was a huge hit. We had close to 1,000 votes in the past day on an online Twitter poll, which is about 900 more than I expected. So I think we'll continue to let the people decide this each week. And our three candidates this week are Joe Madsen, St. John's University attackman from Locust Valley, New York, TD Ireland, an Albany Midi and face-off specialist from Victor, New York, and Joe Tierney, a Marist attackman from Bethpage, New York. Madsen, he had one assist and three goals, including the game winner with 27 seconds left to help the Red Storm beat Siena 13-12. Madsen picked up Big East Rookies of the Week, too. Ireland had one goal and one assist and won 15 of 21 face-offs. That's 71%, Dix. In the Great Dane 17-6 victory over Cornell. Our final candidate, Joe Tierney. Tierney scored the first two goals of his college career and finished with two goals and one assist in the Red Foxes' 11-7 win over Drexel. And the poll results are in, Dix. Pulling in an impressive 47% of the votes is our new Epic Isle Committed Academy Freshman of the Week, Joe Tierney of Marist. There was a ton of love out there for at Joe T. Lax 7. Albany's TD Ireland took in 37% of the votes, and Madsen picked up another 16%. Congratulations to all three of these Committed Academy alumni, especially Joe Tierney, our epic IL Committed Academy Freshman of the Week. Now, for all you high school players in the classes of 2017 and 2018 who are committed to Division I schools, make sure you have submitted your commitment to us at Inside Lacrosse. We sent a couple waves of invitations out, and the 10 league all-star teams are quickly filling up for this summer. We're about 75% of the way there. The Epic IL Committed Academy is a transformative three-day developmental camp where you will improve your skills on and off the field. Held at Goucher College in Baltimore the last weekend in July, there's no better experience to prepare you for playing college lacrosse than the Committed Academy. On the field, players represent their future school and conference to compete for the Committed Cup against the other nine Division I conferences. Off the field, you'll engage in sessions about academic advising, character, and leadership development, and begin to forge those important bonds and relationships with teammates that will last a lifetime. As one parent said last year, I highly recommend this experience to anyone going on to play D1 lacrosse. Look for more information on InsideLacrosse.com. All right, Dix, it's time for our weekly session of Give and Go, where I will give you a topic, give you some time to react on, and then you go on it.
This is quickly becoming a favorite among our listeners.
Yes.
And I have to say, so I like two listeners in particular, the Jackson brothers, Jeff Jackson, All-American at Hampton Sydney, a fixture on the club scene for years, and then played on the U.S. national team, I want to say 1990. And then his son is a senior at Roanoke, two-time All-American, Kevin Jackson, really nice player for the Roanoke Maroons. And then Matt Jackson, who I went to Loyola High School with, as well as Johns Hopkins University.
Remember Matt Jackson.
So the Jacksons love to praise and slash bust my chops about these about the podcast. We also have a very loyal listener in Tom Huppman. And Hupp is, along with Paul Woody, are the founders of 24/7 Lax.
Oh, yeah.
But Tom is a podcast aficionado. You want any type of podcast, you want to grab his phone. And just, you know, I mean, the guy is like a podcast junkie, and he's actually given us very positive and constructive feedback on our podcast. So
excellent. Well, you know. I'm glad people are enjoying this.
You're blushing.
Okay, Dix. This one is it was my fault. So on Friday, the Blue Jays were playing Princeton, and hours after the game, even I was still a little disheartened by the performance, and I think I texted you saying something like, I still can't believe that game. It was, Princeton dominated. And you texted me back and said, thanks. I haven't seen it. I taped it on my DVR.
I'll tell you what I wrote back. You wrote at 6:29 on Friday, I can't get over that wretched performance by the Jays. Terrible way to start the weekend. And I replied, not home, have it on DVR, but thanks.
And then I said sorry. And so this weekend, this week, our give and go is the three biggest buzz kills or bummers that can happen to you. And I'll start. So they're all kind of related to this sports weekend that I had this game. Obviously, when you're taping the game, when you have some other conflict or an obligation that you have to, like you got to go to a wedding on a big college football weekend or something, and you miss a college lacrosse game you're looking to see. When someone does that to you and they text you, oh my God, did you see what happened in this game? And
like you did to me.
So I'll come clean with you. My kids are at that age where they got to go to bed at like 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
I got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And that's prime like college basketball time. So I'll have to pause the game. And those are the nights when my kids are the worst. They refuse to bounce on the bed, won't put their pajamas on, won't brush their teeth.
They have the innate sense that dad is trying to get to something.
Of course.
And I'm sure you're calm, cool, and collected, and they have no clue that you're preventing them from watching Duke NC State for the 95th time.
That's exactly what is happening. And they know. They know that they want an extra story. They know this. So by the time I get back downstairs, start the DVR from where I left off or if it's halftime, fast forward through every commercial, I still can't get to the end of the game before it's over. So I have to take my phone and put it away, like put it in a drawer or something, turn the ringer off. And then, because if, for instance, Duke were to lose a basketball game, thankfully it doesn't happen all that much in the big scheme of things, I would hear about it. I would hear a lot of trash talking and a lot of, oh, what happened to this game? As if I play on the team or something like that.
Wait a minute. First of all right, Duke, you just sound like every Duke basketball fan, so arrogant. When they lose, which is not very often.
Which is what I'm saying, which is why.
And the second part
why
is,
people feel the need to tell me when something, when they do lose.
You're not that important, Mr. Flynn, that everyone in the world has to
taunt you. Oh, I'm not. Just my
you.
Friends. They give me a hard time.
Come on. Give me a break.
So, first one is the number one buzzkill.
The spoiler.
Is a spoiler. Whether it's a movie or a TV show. You know, mm-hmm. Dick's just finished watching The Wire. And he told me how it ended, and I was like, don't tell me. I haven't watched it yet. I'm waiting to get the VHS tape of it.
10 years. Get your Netflix DVD. But you know what? Netflix doesn't have The Wire. It's unfortunate.
What?
But I watch it on HBO on demand.
Yeah, HBO. So you do the streaming at times. But, the spoiler, the unnecessary spoiler. I think there's a statute of limitations on how long the spoiler can be. Like, if after a while you haven't seen something, that's on you. Mm-hmm. Right. All right, number two. Similar to the Hopkins thing, I was pretty excited about this game, and it came at a weird time. You know, it was 3:00 on Friday, so I had the opportunity. You know, we have a really nice newsroom here at Inside Lacrosse where you can sit and watch the games. We have two TVs, and we stream stuff, and that's where the guys film things and do some other shows here. I could watch it here. It might be the only opportunity I have all season to watch a game here, or I could go home, but I have to leave early. So I forgot to set the DVR to tape, and I'm having a problem with my Verizon app. It's not working like it used to, mm-hmm. where I could record remotely. So I had to rush home, get home. Long story. I had to go up. Kids were napping. Nannies were watching Game of Thrones, and I'm like...
People were texting you about Duke basketball.
I'm like, I wanted to watch this game in my living room on my couch, you know, but my nanny was watching Game of Thrones, and I had to run upstairs. So excited for that game, and then that happened. You know, where at the end of the game, I just came downstairs and put it on in the background when it was 16-4 and just said, I'll just have it on and I'm not focusing on this. So that's just a total bummer. Whether it's
just a beaten man.
Any favorite team that you have when you're so excited to watch a game and it's just, I imagine that's the way Patriots fans felt during the Super Bowl before, you know, the comeback.
Before the comeback, yeah, sure.
And then my third one is just a pitiful sports weekend. Where all your favorite teams lose and you have to suffer through something like that with the Blue Jays and Duke losing to North Carolina and, you know, my soccer team lost. Arsenal's lost to Liverpool. It was a miserable weekend for me following my teams.
Right.
So what do you got? Have you experienced any of those?
No question.
Annoyances?
Well, yeah. Like I said, Friday night, you and a bunch of other people. It wasn't just you. I'm busting your chops. There were a number of other people that were texting me and saying, wow, Hopkins really stinks today, or, you know, so-and-so is getting destroyed off ball, and, oh, my God, have you ever seen Hopkins play this poorly, and Princeton's amazing, and so you're like, okay, by the time you get home and watch the DVR, you pretty much have a sense of what happened, instead of being, like, you know, experiencing it firsthand, like, whoa, what? That, you know, so, yeah, anytime there's a... And I'm not as invested as in a lot of teams as you are. I'm more invested in, like, my kids' sports teams.
Yeah, I don't have that yet.
Yeah, and you will eventually. So, yeah, spoilers like that. You know, when your team gets thumped on TV, I remember back to several Ravens games. There was one in particular. The first year Steve McNair was with the Ravens. They won the North Division, I think. And they're hosting the Tennessee Titans. I mean, this is just like merely a formality of the Ravens beating the Titans to advance to the AFC Championship game. And I can't remember the setup, if they were the number one seed that year, but they may have even have hosted the AFC Championship game, and they lost on a last-second field goal. I don't even remember who the kicker was for. I don't think it was Al Del Greco for the Titans, but it was some old jabroni for Tennessee. And like, you know, the kick is good and the game is over and the crowd is silent. And I was watching on television and you're just like, that doesn't count, right? Like they're going to go back and like somebody was offsides or somebody called timeout or it's not real, you know? And then you had I don't know if it was the year after. I think it was a year after, a year or two after. But then they get similar situation. I think the Ravens win the North. They're number one or two seed in the playoffs. And the Colts come to town. And they're playing Peyton Manning. And I think the Colts won that game like 15-6. They kick five friggin' field goals. And, you know, you just... You're just like, this isn't real. Like, this isn't, this can't be happening.
It was 15-6.
It was, okay, yeah. Yeah. So I think.
That was awesome.
Like, and then, you know, obviously one of the biggest, and I'm a big Ravens fan. I enjoy watching the Ravens play.
Gary Anderson was the kicker for
Gary
the Titans.
Anderson, yeah. I think it was in his 37th year in the NFL kicking. But I think those two losses may have been more disappointing than the AFC Championship game where Lee Evans couldn't hold on to the touchdown pass and then Billy Cumdiff, Scott Norwood, the kick.
You know, those are the first two times those names have been mentioned in the walls of Inside Lacrosse in years.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Because of those very reasons?
Yeah, we try not to talk about those two
people
guys.
Give Lee Evans way too much garbage. I thought that play was well defended. They say he should have caught, well, maybe should have caught it, but it wasn't like the defender didn't play well against him. But Cumdiff coming onto the field and just shanking the that chip shot field goal was... Because you're like, all right, well, we're going. Ravens are going to tie it up. They're going to get an overtime against the Patriots, and we're going to do this. And then he just, you know, shanks it. And I'll never forget Terrell Suggs' face and the, you know, mouthing, oh, my God, on the sideline. So, yeah, I mean, more buzzkills for me these days are more, you know, coaching the Rough Riders, the 2022 team, the seventh graders, like when we've got a game and, you know the kids have practiced well and they played hard and they're ready for a game and they just come out and for whatever reason they just don't execute and have a tough time. You're like, man, this is really a bummer. You feel bad for the kids. You question yourself as a coach. You know, me and the guys I coach with, we question ourselves. So, you know, that's a big bummer. This is a big one. And I know we've talked about food a lot. I've got, you know, my sons are 14 and 12. My 14-year-old especially can eat. You know, I mean, it's just anybody.
That's what 14-year-old boys do.
Exactly. That's what I'm finding out. So, like, you know, if I have, like, I skip lunch or I have a meeting, you know, whether it be this or that or, you know, and my wife's like, you know, hey, do you want, you know, I made such and such for dinner or I'm going to make, you want me to make you? And you're like, no. Do we still have this left in the fridge? Oh, yeah, there's plenty of it. And then you're like, you're thinking about that. You're thinking about it, like, at the meeting. And then you're thinking about it on the ride home. You're like, I can't wait to, you know, I'm so hungry. I can't wait to have this. And then, like, and I'm not the kind of guy that, like, comes in the house and, like, goes right to the fridge and grabs. Like, I say hi to my family. I go upstairs. I get changed. And then I come down. And I want to be comfortable, like, and I open the refrigerator, and whatever I was going to eat is gone. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And then, like, hey, Matt, I ate it. Didn't you already eat dinner? Oh, yeah, I was hungry. Dude, that was my dinner. Sorry. I didn't know. You know, and it's just like, that's like, so then it's like, oh, man, you're making eggs, you got cereal, or, you know, that's where peanut butter is like endless supply. You know, so that is a huge buzzkill. When you have your heart set on a certain meal, even if it's leftovers, you know, and you're going to eat it, and it's not there when you get home, it ticks me off.
I had a recent one of those. We did some family thing, and then we were going to go to a Chick-fil-A, and my kids love Chick-fil-A.
Who doesn't?
It was closed for remodeling.
It wasn't Sunday.
No, it was Saturday.
That is the other
Saturday.
That is, I will say, Chick-fil-A. So I love the, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but while it's on my, so
I'm sorry.
I love the, you ever had the chicken, egg, and cheese biscuit?
Yeah, of course.
At Chick-fil-A?
Yeah, they're awesome.
I mean, that's like once, you know, every quarter get one of those and it's like, it could be Sunday morning, and you're like, oh, I want a chicken, egg, and cheese. Like, oh,
they're closed.
Sons of Guns are closed. It's Sunday. But go ahead.
Right next to my, I go to the dentist over in Maple Lawn.
Okay.
And there's that Chick-fil-A at Johns Hopkins Road and 29. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? Where Fauci is and Clovis.
Yeah. Looney's out there.
Looney's is in downtown Maple Lawn, if you can call it that. But
oh, well, Fauci's. Oh, yeah. Two. Fauci, are you talking the Turf Valley Fauci?
No, the one that's on Johns Hopkins, right next
so
to the
Laurel.
Applied Physics Lab.
So it's Laurel. I guess Laurel. Laurel.
But there's a Chick-fil-A over there. So I come out of the dentist's office, and I always hit the breakfast and get something because to treat myself for the dental appointment.
Right.
But I was going to that, and they were closed. It's like been there for 3 years. It was closed for remodeling. I don't know what they were doing. It's still been closed for a month. I can't imagine the money that they're losing by keeping that thing closed. But then my kids are like, no, we're having Chick-fil-A. I got to go to the next nearest Chick-fil-A is like another 15 minutes away, and there's always too many people there. And oh, God. So guess where we went? To that Chick-fil-A.
That's when you introduce your children to the concept of disappointment.
Oh, well, the wife was, we're going to Chick-fil-A.
Oh, well,
and then guess what happened?
That was closed.
We'll wait in the car. You run in and get it.
Because
you can't get near. You have to park the two restaurants over and then run across.
You're a pack mule.
It was bad. And then I waited in line. Oh, I was fighting
and
people.
And then,
the,
you know what would have been the best?
And they're like, did you get straws?
Yeah. If your daughter would have been like, this isn't what I wanted. And she just threw it out the window. Like Frank Sinatra.
No,
with a
plate threw it of out the window. Like a shake out the window, but the window's up. And it just sticks on the window. Or like Ron Burgundy and his burrito.
And then you just completely lose your mind.
Yeah. I was like, you know, there's like six restaurants we could go to between here and our house. We could go to any of them.
Yeah.
But the Chick-fil-A, no, we're going to that Dobbins Square Chick-fil-A.
Oh, now I know what you're talking about.
By the Kmart.
I am so pissed. They took Baja Fresh out of that Dobbins Center shopping center. They put in a Pi 5. And nothing against Pi 5. But Baja Fresh to me. So when you talk about Mexican food, or I guess Mexican fast food, would you characterize?
Want to call it quick serve or
quick serve? That's fine. So I had a conversation with somebody recently about Taco Bell. I have never eaten Taco Bell in my life. Never. I never have, and it just never appealed to me. I like if I get that kind of food, it's Chipotle or Baja Fresh or Qdoba. And Baja Fresh is my favorite out of those three. I just love it. I think it's great. And we used to hit up that Dobbin, and the kids love it. My wife loves it. You know, so we used to hit up that Dobbin, you know, at least twice a month. And they replaced it with a Pi 5. Unbelievable.
I don't even know what Pi 5 is.
Pi 5 is a, there's two around where we live. Dobbin is the one, and Route 40 is the second. But it's like you make your own pizza. Like you don't make your own pizza, but you know, okay, hey, how you doing tonight? Yeah, I'll take a pie with pepperoni, you know, sausage, green pepper, and mushroom. And it's like a personal pan pizza kind of situation.
Sounds good.
There's
not like Baja
9,000 pizza joints around, you know, and I don't know. Yeah, it's not like Baja Fresh. There are not that many Baja Freshes around.
What's the difference between Qdoba, Baja Fresh, and Chipotle?
Baja Fresh to me is I love their sauces, and I just like the way the food tastes. If that makes sense, and I'm not bagging on Chipotle or Qdoba. It's just different. With I like Baja Fresh. You can get it's called a burrito ultimo, the wet burrito. It's a burrito. Then they put the sauce, and then they melt the cheese on top of the sauce. And I love that. And you can get it with I don't get any rice in it because I don't, you know, I try to watch carbs any way I can, even though I'm beating, you know the tortilla shell the size of a throw rug. You can get vegetables in it and stuff like that. And that's kind of like I don't get the burrito when I go to Chipotle. I get the bowl.
Yeah.
You know, I always get the bowl. Well,
the problem with the burrito is the way that's wrapped up. You might just get a whole bite mouthful of rice.
You're right.
But if you get the bowl, you mix it up and you get, you know, a good ratio of everything you want.
I don't get the rice in the bowl either. I get the green, the fajita,
peppers?
The peppers and the lettuce and all that kind of stuff. And then Qdoba, I just go with burrito just because I think out of the three, Qdoba is a distant third in terms of the taste of the food and the quality of the food. But it's still good. That's not bad.
All right.
It always comes back to food, man.
It does.
Always comes back to food.
Hey, before we go, though, let's look at what to watch next week.
Yeah.
Another good slate of games starting on Friday night. Stony Brook at Rutgers, 6 p.m.
Yeah. You know, the Seawolves are a team that are scoring a ton of goals. They're in the IL Maverick poll this week, I believe, for the first time or were they here last week?
They were in
well?
Last week.
Yeah. So, you know, Jim Nagel doing a great job, you know, with the Seawolves and heading to Rutgers. You know, Rutgers, the big win against Brown. And then they've, you know, after the Stony Brook game, Rutgers has Princeton staring him in the face. So, you know, a big week for the Scarlet Knights. Loyola at Duke.
Yeah.
So a real big game there. Can Duke keep the momentum off the Richmond win? And
who do you like in that one?
I like Loyola. I think right now Loyola's a better team. I don't know who on Duke is going to defend Pat Spencer. I mean, Spencer, what?
He had 1-9.
9 assists against Holy Cross this past weekend.
Yes.
You know, so Loyola.
And 9 assists.
Yeah, and some people might be like, oh, Holy Cross. Holy Cross beat Loyola at
That's
Loyola
assisting
2 years
on almost
ago.
Every goal. Think about that.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. Hopkins at Towson this coming Saturday. Towson is a team that lost to Loyola last week and then beat UMBC in uninspired fashion.
8-6. Well, eked it out.
And I saw Towson fell out of the poll, right? Didn't they fall
slipped out of the, to 16. Some people did not have them in the top 20.
I did see some people tweeting out about how they didn't have Towson.
They come in tied at 16 with Ohio State.
And I think Towson's a really good team. Just their wins have come against teams that don't have any wins. You know, I think UMBC has one win.
Georgetown hasn't won.
Yeah, Georgetown's winless. Mount St. Mary's is winless. So that's tough. Penn at Michigan. You know, Michigan's 6-1. Wins over the weekend against Mercer and Furman. So not like that they're impressive in Mercer and Furman are kind of struggling this year, but it was a Friday-Sunday kind of situation, so 2 games in 48 hours, which is nice for a young team.
Penn's got a nice non-conference schedule.
They do.
Virginia, Penn State, Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, they're legit in terms of their scheduling. I think it's really going to pay off when they get to the Ivy League, because the Ivy League, obviously, as we've talked about, wide open. Maryland at Albany. That's going to be a great game.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Maryland heads up north for the first time. Whenever
I
Albany,
I don't know if they've ever played there.
I don't think they have. Every time Maryland has played Albany, which has been a handful of times, obviously you have the connection of Scott Maher, former assistant at Maryland, and the Terps. So first time up north. Does this become the Yale trip for Maryland? You know, going to Yale the last couple of years and losing close ones to Yale. Is this the Yale trip now? Or can Maryland rebound from that loss to Notre Dame, right? Yeah, Notre Dame.
Yeah. I think that's the most interesting game of the weekend.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see what transpires there. And then last game I'm kind of focused on is Hofstra at UNC.
Hofstra, you know, has put together a couple nice wins. Ryan Tierney, Seth Tierney's son, Under Armour All-American, scored 4 goals this past weekend in a win over Georgetown. So he's playing incredibly well. This is a good litmus test for the Pride to go down to Carolina. You know, can Carolina handle the success of beating Denver? It's kind of funny to say the defending national champion, but, you know, new cast of characters and a lot of key roles for North Carolina. So can they handle that success of knocking off number one and hold serve against an up and coming Hofstra team at down in Chapel Hill?
Yeah,
and I you know Furman. Furman Penn State is this Tuesday, 3:00 in the afternoon on Big Ten Network.
Doing that one?
I am doing that one. First opportunity for people to see this great Penn State offense. Ament, Aponte, Spillane, O'Keefe. First opportunity to see those guys on television on a national scale. So I'm excited about calling that game.
And where's that one?
Big Ten Network.
But where are you going? Are you going to State College?
At Penn State.
Okay.
Yeah, at Penn State.
Indoors?
No, it's going to be outside.
Nice.
It's supposed to be raining, but it's supposed to be the temperature is supposed to be in the 60s. So, you know, the broadcast setup at Penn State isn't the greatest. They will have a renovation of their lacrosse facility coming up. I'm not sure if that's happened or not. I don't think it has, but it's a renovation's coming up soon.
Got it. All right. Guys, if you like what you hear, please subscribe, leave a rating, and share it with a friend. Also, don't forget to check out Monday's In the Crease podcast with Abern and Devitt, along with Friday's Weekend Preview podcast featuring Quint Kesenick and Terry Foy. If you want to leave us a comment or reach out to us on Twitter, it's at Dixon Lacrosse or at D_Fly, or you can give me an email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. Thanks for listening. See you next week.